So, shall we start?
Let's get them.
Okay, great. Greetings, everyone. Okay, so, good afternoon. We're going to start the Story County Board of Health today. So, the first thing I'm going to do is call to order. And now the public forum. This is the time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health. Does anyone wish to speak? Nope. Okay, so we're going to move on to consent agenda. These items listed on the consent agenda will be enacted by one motion. I would like to make a change if everyone is okay with this for our agenda. Two changes. One, I would like to move the Crestview Mobile Home Park update to our first order of business, yeah, if there's no objections. And the other thing is I would like Kristen to give us an update on the, I guess that could be under comments, right?
Sure.
Yeah, we'll put that in under comments so we don't have to really change the agenda. So first of all, I'd like to make a motion that we okay the approval of that agenda change.
So move.
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
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 All those opposed? Thank you. And now the other two things on the consent agenda are approval of the minutes and the meeting schedule for calendar year 2018 and the holiday schedule. I'll take any questions.
Move as presented.
Okay. Second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay. So, now we're going to go to the Crestview Mobile Home Park update.
Afternoon, Marty.
Actually, they were on the first on our agenda, didn't they?
Oh, were they?
Yeah, I guess they were.
Okay.
Didn't look close enough.
It didn't look like it was up there. Margaret James, Director of Environmental Health Department. I just have a short update on what we know as far as what's going on in Crestview. I had Matt go out. There are 41 trailers out there currently, and nothing has been done with the well, just an FYI. So the well still exists, and the lagoon still exists, and I have not heard anything from DNR, good or bad, just no information whatsoever.
All occupants are out.
That is correct.
Okay. And if I remember correctly, on our last meeting, we talked about having some type of plan to remove the trailers.
And Brant, or we just received a partial written order from the DNR on the Wednesday prior to Thanksgiving. I don't know what day that was, but basically telling us how we need to get rid of and demo these trailers. Again, that was a partial order. We still don't have any order from the DNR about how we're supposed to deal with the well or the lagoon, any of that stuff. So Ames Environmental is coming out on Friday morning to inspect the trailers. What that inspection means, a lot of them, I'm assuming she'll just be able to tell us what needs to be done to demo. A lot of the other ones, she's got to take samples from various parts of the trailer, send them to a place that tells you whether they have asbestos in it or not, and it's going to take some time to get those results back. So as far as the schedule, I can tell you they're coming out Friday to inspect a bunch of the trailers, but as far as getting them out of there, we're kind of at the mercy of, one, how long those inspections take, how long it takes to get the results back, and at this point, the weather could become an issue. So I don't think realistically we can give you a schedule on when these trailers are going to be moved out of there, demoed, any of that, because we just don't know.
What was our deadline on? Did we have a deadline on when that was?
I thought it was December.
Yeah. Well, the big thing is that we talked about last time was that the occupants are out,
right,
which was our major.
Yeah. Well, we have clearly, there's progress has been made. We have, that's a big milestone in and of itself.
Right. So that's good. So, Margaret, what about this DNR thing? Are they going to be able to putting up a bunch of roadblocks, or they're not reacting quickly enough?
I was under the impression that Brant was told to go ahead and get the asbestos inspections done and start moving them off. That was my understanding.
That's not correct. We just, like I stated, got a partial written order from council at the DNR instructing Brant or us on how to proceed and removing or demoing these trailers. Prior to that, we had no written direction from DNR on what we were supposed to do.
I was going on their verbal direction, not written direction. I thought that was good enough.
Okay. Thank you very much for telling us that, Margaret. I think it'd be really nice if the Board of Health would know from our own person, you, how true this is, and are they not giving orders, and are they delaying removal of these trailers?
I don't think, and I don't mean to speak out of turn here, I don't know that they're delaying it. I think there's been some indecision in the DNR on what actually needed to be done and how this needed to be handled. So I don't think they're intentionally delaying the process. Are they delaying the process from Brant's point of view? Yes. But we now have some written direction, on how we're supposed to proceed, and we're taking action, because obviously Brant wants to get these trailers out of there just as bad as anyone. The park's not doing them any good just sitting the way it is, so.
On the well, Margaret, again, you can deal with that, right? The well? It's just a matter of capping it.
It is a private well. I cannot force them to cap the well. It is serving the house right now, so I don't know if that's in their best interest until city water is there.
I don't think we were saying anything about what they had to do with the well, did we?
DNR had some discussion on that, but we did not.
Right, okay. So do you have someone to remove these trailers for you? They're ready to be moved out or demoed or
put? We have people to demo them. The issue is these asbestos inspections. That's the big deal, because it's not as simple as going in there saying, yes, this one has asbestos, and, you know, taking a sledgehammer to the thing and breaking it down. You got to clean certain things, rip certain stuff off in certain ways so these asbestos spores don't go anywhere. It's really a painstaking process, I guess, is the best way to put it.
I guess my recollection from October to now, which is a little bit fuzzy, is 41 is less than the number that I think we had. Matt, you and I spoke yesterday. I can't recall to anybody else here what we had for a number at our last meeting for trailers that were there, so I suspect we're down a few.
As far as the number of trailers, I don't know that, Marty, but I do know that a lot of the solid waste that was out there has been removed.
Well, as for the number of the trailers, that was exactly the problem we had in October. We didn't know how many trailers were out there.
Well,
so now we have a number of 41.
We're dealing with, we're okay.
That's
a benchmark then. But I suspect, as I think we had the Treasurer's Department speak to it, at the time, I think Environmental Health spoke to it, and I can't recall for the life of me what the number was, but I suspect it was a higher number than 41. Just a guess.
I don't know.
One issue with DNR is that they said, you know, they regulate the moving the trailers with asbestos, that, you know, so that they would be in violation if they moved it without doing their asbestos work. But if they're sitting put, DNR cannot enforce them to move them. That would mainly be planning's job or some county entity to do that. And then as soon as they start moving these trailers, if they haven't been, you know, addressed for the asbestos, that's where DNR comes in. So bit of a waiting game here, maybe? I don't know what's going on.
It's not a waiting game. Like I said, we just got that written order at the end of November, and we got an inspector that's coming out Friday to start inspecting these things. Once we get the inspection report, we send that to the DNR. The DNR, there's a 10-day waiting period with the DNR. Once they sign off on it, we can go ahead and get them demoed. So, I mean, we are moving forward. It's just we're kind of at the DNR's mercy on doing.
Who's your contact person?
At the DNR?
No, at the, who's, Ames Environmental?
I forget the young lady's name. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
Okay.
Do the titles still have to be cleared up on these two as well?
Yeah, some of them.
Some of them?
We have folks from the auditor here. If they would like
to hear from the Treasurer's Department?
Yeah.
they're here. Anybody want to hear the treasurer's?
Sure.
They had a Renee Tweet, our Story County Treasurer, and Rhonda, I want to say Heinz, but Sykes, made a presentation to us today in regards to this very matter, and I think it might be enlightening if you get that given to us right now.
Sure, that'd be good.
That'd be great. The other thing I would personally like is, if Margaret, if you could do us a favor for the Board of Health, if you could just contact the DNR and see if there's any way that we can, that any way we can help speed it up, or see if you know exactly what the delay is, and just someone checking on it ourselves.
And again, I don't want to speak out of turn, but, and Bill Talbot from my office can speak to this too. Bill and I, since I guess I became involved in August with this, have worked diligently with the DNR and tried to kind of not stir it up too much. I don't know if, you know, going to the DNR at this point, now that we actually have an order, is going to help anything on our end.
We'll see. We'll see. Thank you.
I called them today.
Okay.
Waiting to get back.
Yeah. So it will just be interesting to see. Okay? Great. Okay. So, and we would like to hear from the secretary, or from the...
Or Renee.
Renee, yes, or whoever.
Thanks to you.
Your treasurer's office.
Ron Sykes from the Story County Treasurer's Office. Unfortunately, I didn't bring any of my papers up that have real numbers on them, but like Marty mentioned this morning, the abatement of property taxes was on their agenda for the abatement of taxes that he has successfully completed the removal of valueless home paperwork, a lot of which had previously been done over the years, and he had never removed them. So his attorney's office presented us with a list that had that completion. The process behind that is one of two things. You will either junk it and remove it, or if there's a buyer, they can also remove it. The taxes technically get abated, and if there is no title, the process will continue without that title as a result of that document that they complete by going through the FEDs, which is the forced entry detainer, which is the first step of that. So he has 12 mobile homes that he has completed the paperwork on, presented to our office, and we will remove from the tax roll effective today because of the abatement. There are 10 additional mobile homes on the list that was originally presented to us back in July when Mr. Talbert's office started working with us. As far as the rest of them, I'm not sure what his process is. And you're saying 40-some trailers are out there. When I did talk to Brandt about this, he told me he hadn't moved any of these yet because of the asbestos DNR regulation. So I guess my interpretation would be he knows they have to be taken out of there. DNR is telling him what needs to be done on the asbestos side of it, but I don't know that there's anything from DNR saying you can't move them out. It's a process that he has to go through for the inspection to get them out the way they're supposed to be done. But so again, we have 12 that can technically be taken out of there. However, DNR tells them to take them out, and we have an additional 10 that he can file the papers in our office with.
So you have 20. So if those 10 are, if the paperwork is filed on those 10, that means there's 22 trailers that can be removed.
Correct.
That means that there's what, 38? 39. No, 29. 20. About 20 trailers. Sorry.
I'll get my calculator. Your meeting, I can actually go and run a report that tells me how many active titles or, you know.
Well, active titles or whatever, there's 41 trailers out there.
Right, which I guess my report's going to tell me if some of those are gone that haven't had paperwork processed through our office.
But they're not gone. They're there.
Well, if there's 41 physical trailers there,
yes, and my report says
I have 60-some, we have a discrepancy of 20-some trailers. I guess is where I'm going with it, which may have nothing to do with any of this.
Okay. So, again, the numbers have always been a difficult thing in this, and I'm just trying to kind of find that out. So there's almost 20 trailers, and if there's 41 there, almost 20 trailers that will, I'll get my name. No, almost 20 trailers that we, can they be moved?
Technically, he has gone through the process for 22 trailers through the court by obtaining the FEDs and then continuing with the removal of the home,
yep,
the valueless mobile home, which go hand in hand.
Right.
Out of those 22 that he's done the FEDs on, he has only presented our office with 12 valueless mobile home documents.
Got it. Yes, I got that.
Right.
So what happens to the 19? By the way, that is a number. What about the 19?
That's a question I don't have because they're in other owner names. They're gone. He can't do an FED on them if they're already gone.
Can they be removed?
Well, they all have taxes owing on them. So then that, where does that abatement come into play?
Just to clarify something, her report, let's say if it has 60-some report mobile homes on there,
right,
they're saying there's only 41. Where are the 20-some? And who's going to be checking to make sure it's the right ones are gone?
There's no way to know that.
I know.
Really,
so apparently there's some mobile homes that have been gone.
That we don't have record of.
Yes. And we don't know if the ones that we abated this morning are the ones that are gone or if they're still there or... Mm-hmm. But the ones that are left, they all owe taxes.
But they're not necessarily in Prescott's name?
Correct. No. They're in... Some of them are in private individuals' names.
Majority of what's left is going to be.
Yeah.
I think he pretty well had the ones that had his name on it. There might be three or four out there that are not on it yet.
And then is Brand held responsible for those that were left behind on his property?
Because I'm pretty
I would assume he would be.
Again, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I believe that those that are in other people's names that are still there, we have to go through what the court refers to as the abandonment process, which is similar to an FED, where at that point we can get a valueless title after going through the abandonment process.
Unless they have given title to
Brent. Just the ones that people have left behind and Brent does not have the title to. Correct. That's our understanding.
So do you know exactly what mobile homes he has taken out of there?
I have a map. I don't have it with me.
Well, we'd like to see that if we could.
Okay.
So that we can clarify with her. Our records, the ones that we abated this morning, are typically the ones that are gone or not. Because if not, there's trailers being moved that we don't know about.
All right.
Great.
I
have one.
Yes.
And I can say no trailers have been moved from that park besides the ones... Where the 12 tenants that were left and moved other mobile home parks, that's what I thought. There's been no mobile homes moved since those, so they haven't been moved, the ones that we abated then today.
No.
Okay.
So you said they could junk it or sell it to somebody who would move it off, is that correct? So wouldn't there be a monetary value if you sell it, and then shouldn't they be paying tax on that?
But if the transfer of ownership takes place as a result of the valueless mobile home, that new owner is not responsible for any prior tax. They get abated, and he moves it off the property, and then if it goes to another property, he would be responsible.
But why would it be considered valueless? And
maybe we should ask Ethan Hunt.
And I don't.
I think beyond what's important for the board health.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we just have to kind of keep track, and now we have a number. There's still 19 that we'll see what they do, and then I think we'll just have to get a report back in, when we meet again in February. Okay? Right? Sounds good. So if anyone else doesn't have anything more to say about this, I'd like to move on.
Thank you.
If that's okay?
I have nothing else.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you very much for that information. Sounds like we're kind of in a little bit of like a Bermuda Triangle. Bermuda Triangle. Perfect. Okay, item number two, discussion and consideration of fiscal year 19 Environmental Health Department's proposed budget.
Okay.
Always fun.
Always fun. Okay, so I've handed out two documents. One is the revenue and one is the expenditure request. This budget is due to the Board of Supervisors later this week. So the only major changes from last year includes, on expenditures, includes summer intern, 180 hours at $10 an hour for $1,800. So that would be an addition. And then also postage and mailing, we are way above what we normally are, so I bumped that up considerably. And then lab services, again, we are way above our 42% where we should be this year, so I bumped that up as well. And then for revenues, really no changes. We look in the crystal ball and predict pretty much, you know, a static level or maybe a little increase in septics and well permits and kind of transfers, things like that. But pretty much just hold it at whatever we're doing this year or all of last year. So otherwise, not a lot of changes to talk about. Our car is in pretty good shape. We've got 110,000 miles on it right now. This year we had an unexpected $900 bill for fixing the brakes on it, so that impacted this year's budget quite a bit. And then also Matt's computer went down, and it was about $650 for replacing that. So on this small budget, those are big ticket items that we're going to have to kind of struggle to make ends meet at the end of the year, but I think we'll be fine. Any questions?
What do you do with your part-time employee during the summer?
What will we do? Well, one thing that I did many years ago was have them go to the discharging systems and collect samples. So that was one very positive outcome from having an intern a few years back. There's also some GIS mapping that we could possibly do if we have the software that he or she could use, a computer. So last year, Northern Iowa University reached out to us to see if we could take an intern, but we didn't have anything in the budget for that time. So I thought, well, I'll be a little proactive. I don't have anyone in mind, but get that on the books and see if it
pops up
during the work.
Sure.
Cool. Workshop. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Any other questions?
So you find yourself having to drive your own vehicle from time to time?
That's mostly Kathy that has to, because I'm using the other one. Okay.
I use the county one.
Yeah, well, once in a while you do, is what he's saying. Yeah. But it's down a lot from the previous year.
Yeah.
So, although they are getting rid of one or decommissioned one. Yeah. So it might be a little tougher for her to use her car.
For my edification alone, nothing else.
Okay. Yeah, very little personal car use. Very little.
That's very little, yeah.
All right.
Hey.
Looks good to me. Do you need a vote for approval or anything?
Approve to recommend to the Board of Supervisors for approval.
So moved.
Okay, second.
Any further discussion?
None.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Pass it again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Margaret.
Okay, Story County Environmental Health again. I don't make up this agenda.
I just
read off of something.
Working within it.
You know, might I just say, from now on, either we got to get another controversy in, right? front of us, where we have to go Crestview at the end of the meeting, because it's like our rooms always clear out afterwards.
Oh, I know. Yeah, nobody wants to hear their stuff.
To hear
it's funny the band
Crestview.
Stuff. Really?
Yeah. No. Only people want to hear about Crestview. No one wants to hear about plugging of wells or marijuana.
Okay, go ahead. So what do I do here for the sign-in? I guess I just do that. Okay. Okay, so... Okay, so this is my report. Every other month I give a report on what's going on with Environmental Health Department. So for the wells, we've done, and this is for the calendar year, 10 well permits, most of them geothermal. I think 4, Kathy, were water wells. This picture shows the loops for the geothermal. I thought it was kind of an interesting picture. Demonstrates that. 20 pluggings for wells, 0 cisterns, 1 well rehab, 170 water samples, and 48 time of transfer inspections. For grants to counties, we had about $30,000 for our grant award, and we have $19,000 remaining. For septics for calendar year 17, 103 permits were up. We're about 20 ahead of last year this time, so it's been a busy year. 17 repair permits and 88 time of transfer inspections. The picture that you see there is an Advantex unit, and that is what's going in at the irons up by the country club. So planning and development has started... are in the middle of meetings with the town of Fernald. It's unincorporated, so it's county. It's all on-site wastewater treatment system, a very wet area and very small lots, and financially strapped in a lot of cases. So they held 2 community meetings so far to talk a little bit about what their needs are in that town. And the reason why we got involved is that there's been a lot of complaints lately. So on those dots up there, maybe if you could turn the light down a little bit, Steph, with the close one, we could see a little better. Perfect. Thank you. So the 2 black dots on the left there, towards the west, they keep complaining about each other burning, illegal burning. So we're spending a lot of time with them and trying to, you know, calm them down. And then the red and yellow dots, no, the red and turquoise dots are both on-site waste failure to treat their sewage. So those are 2. And then the yellow and pink dots are both burnt down, but the materials haven't been moved away. So the yellow guy is working on it, the pink guy is not. Gal. And then the green one in the middle, we are trying to get him to decide whether or not he needs to knock the house down or go ahead and put the septic system in. Right now there's no one living in the house, but there is an RV parked there all the time. So it's a little hotbed of complaints right now and a lot of time commitment. Now, this next slide shows the yellow dots represent septic systems that we have something on file, a permit or a diagram, something like that. Some of them, I mean, this is as accurate as we can get. Back then, in the 70s, it was more rural route, blah, blah, blah. So it's really tough to really spot them, especially if they've added onto their house and the shape doesn't look like the same in the diagram. But from what we have on file, it looks like there's about 14 that have nothing on file. And then a lot of the ones that are represented with the dots are old. This spring, I believe Darren is going to be doing some tile work, correct, Marty? And maybe we could work with him to do a little bit of testing to see if it's going straight south and, you know, hooked up to the tile that runs north and south through town,
and if we have sewer lines hooked up. We might even try to do something like we did, with Hickory Grove. I don't know. That's a lot of money, and Rick Sanders is telling us that it's going to be a tight year budget-wise. DNR, many, many years ago, asked all the counties in Iowa if we had unsewered communities, and I put this one on the list, but it's pretty low compared to other communities, Luther, for example, that need DNR's attention and DNR's money. So I'm not real hopeful, but I'll call DNR and see if there's ever a possibility that they would help us somewhat with this.
Where is the nearest, just out of curiosity, with Ferndale? Where's the town?
Fernald? Yeah.
Where's the closest, stream or river? Is there something that runs through there?
Matt would know. He used to hang out there as a kid.
South of there.
So it's halfway.
Tile runs through there.
Yeah, Young County Tile runs north and south.
That's right.
We're going to jet it this spring. We've got tree root issues. We're going to take some trees quite likely down. Because we've got, it's holding water on the surface level. We might put some new DIs in.
That's a district tile, right?
It's a district tile, yeah. That's not a private tile.
Is it 8 or 10 inches?
It's just 8. Yeah, it's an old tile. From 1936.
It's a really old, yeah. It's old.
And the railroad runs through there that complicates things.
The real problem here is how you've had some shaping. I mean, it is a convoluted story with multiple layers. That you've had people bring in fill dirt that has caused water movement disruption. The railroad is not cooperative in the sense that we have a tile that goes underneath the railroad that they have a legal obligation to do. We can't get them to answer the mail, the email, or the phone calls. And when we do, it's always, you don't want to talk to me, you want to talk to somebody else, and you start the process over. And we just got done, that's Richland 20, that's a drainage district. We just got done, and the check came in, so we're pretty pleased that we took a tile that had gone beneath that track, set of tracks, and put a large culvert in, and it was like $330,000. So we're thinking that they're probably feeling that they've done all they need to do for a while, which is not helping move the water through that community, which in turn, you have some people with vested desires just to maintain status quo, and it's not a good thing, but on a compelling basis, we are kind of, doing what we can as we can.
Yeah.
But I would have to say, we've held two meetings now, and Jerry Moore and his staff have done a pretty good job of communicating with this community. We got, I think, 22 was the last meeting, 26 in the first meeting in May. They had been able to find some federal programming dollars, but what it came with the caveat that people had to be at a certain income level or below, and that they had to provide the USDA with the information on an income basis, which I think you have a lot of don't tread on me up there, where I don't think you're going to get a lot of buy-in. But the county is trying to, on a road basis, on a drainage basis, on just quality of life issues. Margaret is, hip deep on that. And we are seeing modest progress, but there's a lot of work yet to be done.
Mm-hmm.
That's it in thumbnail.
Okay. Great.
So now we are in the...
That's Fernald. That's
the
we find it today.
And we've had seven permits issued. They're mostly working on that north end there where the townhouses are, that diagonal strip of parcels. And Advantex's for all of those lots. That's kind of what Ames needed to see because this is in the Ada Hayden watershed, basically, and it's protected for that. The problem so far, four lots, and it's looking more like six lots now, where there's zero perk. I mean, Brian Campbell, the engineer, he said he ran perks, and he said the water level might have even risen, not going there because it's coming into the hole. And so based on that, the requirement was for them to discharge to laterals from these Advantex. And so now I said, you can... do tertiary treatment with UV light, but where are we going to put this water? So the engineer is thinking about maybe putting it in the ditch, And so we're working with Ames, we're working with the engineer, but it's not what they initially proposed when they submitted the subdivision plans. So there's 4 to 6 lots up there that are really tricky. I'm not sure how we're going
to
get that in.
Up there at the north?
They are more like in the center, kind of by the tennis courts. Do you see them? Are you familiar?
Oh, it's not the townhomes to the north, though.
No. Mm-hmm. It's a little batch of townhomes that are south of the parking lot there.
Oh, but by the tennis courts there?
Yep.
Well, I noticed they didn't. They ran a tile from that north townhouse on the north, very north. Someone ran a ditch from there all the way to the pond or something.
There's a tile there that
comes in on the south side of that pond to the north.
It goes north to the
pond.
It goes
north from the north townhome lots and goes all the way.
Would that be foundation water?
It was just a dewater because there's a low spot that macro doesn't quite go up high enough, but I'm not pulling up here. The very north lot, about where the east, where it goes like this.
Right.
About from there to the pond, there's a tile. Just a dewater because it's kind of a low area where the water was collected.
It should not be tertiary because they all have laterals. They're getting easements from the golf course.
The
so they're in.
Yeah,
so that shouldn't.
So how many townhomes are going in there by the tennis courts that this high water table?
South of the tennis courts, there's. So each parcel represents a half of the townhouse. So south of the courts there's one. One double unit, and then across the road is where the other problem ones are. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, I think 5 there.
So what were you saying they put in the ditch? They can't put something in the ditch.
No, they can't. So we're not sure where this water is going to go.
That's a problem.
It's not my problem, but it's a problem.
Well, you know, the city's coming out almost now with that Friedrich subdivision. Mm-hmm. They're going to be right across the road with the city sewer almost.
Yeah.
We should have made them up to city sewer.
Oh, they have to, and it's available. They have to. That's what the city wants.
I thought they were going to deny something from
with the Borgmeyer, I think on the east side. Because when we did the map amendment, you had two components. We had two approvals. We had two different ones, the Friedrich, the 140 right. acres or whatever it was.
Yeah.
The Gilbert said they're okay with that. The rest, which is contingent on a farm coming in that hasn't even sold yet to be developed yet.
That's the Borgmeyer.
That's Borgmeyer right. farm. So that's a component. Will it be Ames at some point? Yes. Sometime in the future, yes.
Yeah, once that sewer gets through in the Borgmeyer farm, then it's going to be like right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ames already has it. You see the map. They already have Stang Road going through the middle of the Borgmeyer farm. They have a map that shows where they already have the street.
I've seen that, yeah.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they don't have the infrastructure in there to hook up. They'll have to put
that's
the line.
The good news is this is a temporary fix until the city of Ames gets here. The bad part is what we're talking about.
The bad part is going to be getting hooked up to the city sewer once it gets there because it's not piped for that.
Exactly. I pushed for it, but they wouldn't do it. Nobody would support me. I pushed for it. They said that you can't put pipe in and leave it unused without it.
That's not true.
Going south on you. See?
That's
where
not
are
true.
You, Mark?
I don't buy that at all.
Where were you at that meeting?
Yeah.
Should have him come.
Just so anyway, it's a done deal. There's no sanitary sewer lines in there. But as an Ames taxpayer, I will be at every meeting to make sure I don't pay for those guys to put in sewer. That's just my soapbox message. Sorry, I'm a little heated about that one.
8-inch sewer pipe.
Okay, so now we're moving up to alluvial. Actually, we're moving west to alluvial, a little bit north.
So when is alluvial?
Alluvial is on Prairie Moon, Wyoming. Okay. So we've been working with planning development. So initially they started off as a vegetable stand and had a tiny, tiny little septic system, and all of a sudden they turned into a brewery. It's a bar. And so now they want to add a kitchen. So things are kind of, getting bigger and a little out of hand. Planning is working on them for conditional use permit changes. And so it's not like they're not aware of it. So they're working on that. So meanwhile, we did put in one is in the ground already for the south building where the bar is now. And it's a nice hefty system. It'll take care of those problems, and they'll probably be adding a bathroom. And the plan is to move the brewery equipment to that north white building about in the middle of the picture there. And that's where they also want to put a commercial kitchen for a food truck service. And that's kind of where the rub is right now. But meanwhile, we went ahead and designed a system for that north one. The brewery waste is going to be land applied. It's not human waste. It's just, and so they sprinkle that on the grapes out there. And eventually, they're going to be growing hops, I think. So that's the update on that. Pool, tattoo, and tanning. Chlorine levels complaint received from IDPH passed on to Matt. Talked to the hotel, and that was resolved, I assume, Matt. Yep. Tattoo, no activity, and then tanning, one re-inspection and one annual inspection. I received the grant award for 6 units. Three is going to go for, okay, so that's a compression machine for CPR. And so three goes to Ames, one of which will go up to Story City, and then Story County Medical, one unit, Colo 1, and Huxley 1. And the contract will be signed in January. Special projects, several inquiries on burning or burying buildings on site. So we're going to get a little better information out on our website so we can just refer them to that. We've had some green burial inquiries where people don't want to be in a coffin, and they want to be wrapped in rice paper and not real deep either for some reason. So we're working on getting information. I guess DNR does not have restrictions on that, but IDPH does, and it's a minimum of 3 feet of cover, although they don't talk about how deep you can go and, water table and stuff like that. So it's something that they say that individual graveyards can address and have requirements on. So that's something that, as the Board of Health, we might want to consider. And the interest is because on NPR, there was a nice little piece on green burials. And so, so that's that.
I heard that for county-wise, that you can bury somebody right. Just about any place. You just have to mark it so that we always know that there's human remains there.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be like registered that there's a body buried there.
So
because I want to be buried.
Right. Space.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, there's very few regulations. You think
but I was surprised at that.
There's more regulations on burying cows pigs than people.
Iowa has being the old funeral director in the conversation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
For 6 years. Here's where I get to, you guys are the medical people. Here's my expertise. You have what's called the 48-hour rule, which means you need to be embalmed, buried, or cremated. Human remains can't be transported across state lines without any of that taking place. And this is news to me, as I know the industry, to sit there and think that somebody's going to waive that one.
So did you have to be
buried, embalmed,
or
cremated?
Within 48
hours
of death. So if you're buried in 24 hours,
But the thing is, I would reach out to my brethren in the industry thinking like, okay, I don't think, my suspicion is no nursing home, no hospital is going to release a body to the family. And I would turn to you in that setting. I would challenge you to self-inform in that sense, where you could share with us at some point whether a death takes place at Mary Greeley. With Mary Greeley, would it release the remains to the immediate family?
We had a case like that a couple of years ago, and
going to hang around for a while.
Can't remember the outcome, to be perfectly honest. Wouldn't but a family for religious reasons wanted to take the body immediately.
Why are you even 48 hours? You get
there, there was an article recently in Grandin Funeral Home. They talked about
you guys are suing 48 hours.
Right. Traditional Muslims. You can't. They either have to be in the ground early or something.
It harkens back to a time, you know, when you had more robust pathogens present, you know, as we knew them, and which you don't have that necessarily today. But then again, you're seeing the, you know, the tuberculosis reentering our conversations. I think that we do ourselves a disservice thinking this is a something we should be chasing, because the thing is, you have only to see the mumps outbreaks. You know, the things as we see disease takes place, you know, we have hot spots with the throw-offs there. I would be loath to encourage this behavior. But then again, I'd love to hear more about it.
I would too. I mean, it just kind of...
I challenge you, Doctor, that you go over to Mary Greeley, and the thing is, if somebody is so inclined to pursue this as a means of disposition of a loved one, would the facility that you work in conjunction with release the remains to said family?
Okay.
You're the guy.
Okay, and then Raspberry Hill proposal.
Thursday will be the second interagency review. It's like this little camping little lodge thingy that they're proposing, the same spot where the YFS folks wanted to have their thing. South Dakota, a little bit west, down there. So we'll see what comes up. Crestview, we already did that. And then Harvester Land.
Margaret, I want to make myself clear. When I was asking you to do that, I just want to make sure that what they're telling us is right. Okay? You know, they're saying one thing, and it's like, that's not what our minutes said. Our minutes said there was one trailer that needed to be bagged and taken away. And so it would just be really nice for us to know what the DNR is telling this crew. Okay.
I'd like to see the letter, because I wonder if it wasn't an order of how to proceed, but an order to proceed.
Right. A big difference.
That's a good question.
Very
good
question.
Anyways, it would be nice to know.
Oh, yeah, they will.
Because that was
while we're there, how did our minutes read? Were we to...
It's still pretty bad.
Did we ask Margaret to start fining them as of December?
I don't know how we as a Board of Health can actually make those fines go into play when they're not human beings involved.
We had the Rat Harbor issue, but I think they addressed it in the sense that we're holding these violations in abeyance to keep them from moving to citations if we saw progress. I heard you had said, or Stephen had offered up the fact that they had moved a lot of where we thought that would be a problem. Now we're dealing with an uninhabited facility with abandoned structures on it that has to go through a process of demolition or removal, and I think that's part of the story. And I would suspect there's a money component to seeing this outcome happen. That might be part of the holdup without saying as much. Now, that's speculation on my part alone, but I don't think this is a cost-free exercise, and that might be what some of the issues we're dealing with here.
Well, I think one of the best pieces of information we got from Crestview is that there are now 41 trailers. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how many there are next week.
Well, at this time last year. Thank you, Matt.
Okay, on with the show. Harvester Land Holding Citation. These guys keep promising that next month they're going to hook to city sewer, and they've been telling me that since, and I'm embarrassed to say this, 2014, after I looked at the, so I sent them a notice of violation, 30 days is up, so now citation with a fine. And this is one of the big developers in Ames. So
where's this at?
This is south on 69, on the west side of the road. There's an old farmhouse, kind of right before that fancy Timberland, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
Oh, this
all those big fancy houses.
South of that cemetery there?
Yes. Yep. Yep.
Right south, the first that little first farmhouse?
That white farmhouse, right, and just north of the brand new house.
That's probably by Dixon.
Yeah. Yeah. That goes with that property that they bought behind there.
Uh-huh.
I think and he owns that. They own that.
They do.
And that needs to be hooked up to city sewer.
Right.
That's right out there, isn't it?
Right, but it's not there yet.
So you mean the city sewer?
Right.
Oh, it's not
it's
yet.
Planned for there.
But
meanwhile...
So what are you making him... You want him to do what? Hook up?
Hook up. Move people out or put a septic system in. 2014.
But what's going on? There's people living there now?
Yeah, they move people in.
Well, what? They don't have a septic system?
No.
Where's it going?
Well, it's a tank, and I have them pump it out a lot, but...
What? How long can you have them... How long can that go along?
Well, every month they say it's happening. So, you know...
It's 2014?
Yeah.
So how long? Okay. Are you allowed to pump it forever? Or no? Well, how long?
I think what Margaret is trying to say is that it's kind of got under the radar.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And if they're, you know, Mr.
Yeah, well, send him a fine then.
Blah, blah. That's what I'm working on.
That's where we're at.
Sounds good.
You're professionally incredulous, and she's with you.
Okay. Trainings and meetings, the best thing that's happened this past couple weeks is we had a chair massage. That was wonderful. That was a freebie. HR is doing wonderful training, HR training, safety training, and a chair massage. So that's been very nice. It was really interesting. I did attend a DuPont CAP meeting like 2 weeks before they announced their closure, and we all of business as normal just 2 weeks before it closed, so it was really a shocker. So stay tuned on that. And that's all I have. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you very much.
What happened on the we granted that waiver on the person that wanted to put their own system in? How did that?
It's in, and Mark was the babysitter, right? And then Matt,
that
I think Matt got the measurements on it.
Oh, with Al Hermanson?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty much. Have you been up there lately?
The awning that was done was the same.
The what now?
We talking about Al?
Last time I was informed of anything was when the same was down. That's the last time I
was there. Yeah, well, he's got the old tank is filled in. He's got the new tank, we got all the pump system's in, he's got the dirt on, but then he left for 10 days. Now the cold weather's got him. So, I don't know. So everything's hooked up. Everything's hooked up, but whether he gets his final dirt all graded, I don't know. Depends on how cold it gets on him.
So you do need a final up there.
Yeah. Yeah, he's finally got everything's hooked up and filled. He sent me some pictures, actually, of it. I have it on my phone.
Okay.
So you feel that he did what he said he was going to do?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been up there like, I don't know, I've been up there four or five times.
Okay.
Well, he didn't quite follow my directions. He went more than he should have. He wouldn't have had to put quite so much sand in, but that's more sand's better than none, you know, less.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. Yeah. Matt said it was pretty tall when he was out there.
Yeah, he put about a foot more of sand than he needed to, but.
Huh.
That's okay. It just takes more dirt.
Okay, he's got sounds dirt. Good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, he's got,
okay.
He's got all the dirt.
Story County Public Health.
Thank you, Margaret. Good afternoon.
Hello. So we've been busy with school audits, which we're about done with now. Just have a big
day. I'm sorry, if you could just make sure you introduce yourself for a minute.
Sorry, Teresa Ferrari. In the Story County Public Health. And we've been busy doing the school audits and just have a few daycares left, so we're actually way ahead of schedule on that. And then flu shots, of course, quit doing the clinics outside of the hospital, but we're still getting quite a few walk-ins with that. And disease-wise, haven't really had anything out of the ordinary, no active TB. We did have a Legionella here recently, which the guy was hospitalized for, so that was one that we haven't seen in a long time. And Sherry and I both went to a TB thing from that Mayo puts on was very informative, and learned more about that. And then to Friday, actually, we're going to go to IDPH, has started a quarterly updates because they're changing some things on how they do some of their diseases. So that's really not a lot other than that happening.
Right.
Questions?
Great.
Good to see the lack of stories and with the communicables.
Yeah.
It's always,
you know, been.
I always
right.
challenge myself if I can remember what those terms are.
I always like
when I see them on there.
The diseases are too
loud. Yeah, we don't want to see them.
You don't want, yeah, you want no stories.
Thank
you,
all right. Thank you very much. Okay, Denise M. Yes.
You're doing fine.
Thanks. I'm looking less.
I'm sort of encouraged by that. Okay, I have some party favors for you, as I always do. Some of these were not going to transfer well via the email, and some of these are just hot off the press. So, and yeah, some serious fun brochures. Scatter as you please.
We got buildings. We have to find homes for this.
Sure.
So, what's that?
It's a lot of paper.
Yeah.
That thing, Jerry.
We do
this in Georgia's memory.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, Denise in for YSS. The yellow that you have in front of you is our sort of monthly report that we usually give to Prevention Policy Board, but it lists everything that we've done in terms of programming. So as you can see, we're plugging along in a lot of our school programming. By the end of December, we will have finished 19 implementations of Project Alert, which I mentioned before is one of the programs that we do in the 6th, 7th, and 8th grades. We go by first and second year, so some schools prefer to do it at the 6th and 7th grade levels. Some do 7th and 8th. But that's 13 sessions where you get a chance to, you know, give a message and repeat it and practice it and repeat it again. And this is what we refer to as a science-based program that has shown over time to have a lot of validity. Our grant for IDPH requests that we have... that we can prove that those kids have either maintained or increased the perception of harm of those drugs at about 80%. We're usually at 95 or 96%. So the kids really respond well to that, and it gives them a good chance to practice refusal skills. So you teach them how to say no in those kinds of high-pressure situations, and you practice it, you practice it, you practice it. I go in again with my Mayor's Youth Committee kids and work at least with the Ames kids on doing that again with a program that we do once a semester with them. So that's a nice opportunity to reinforce those kinds of messages. We also are doing a lot of programming at the university with sororities and fraternities, the health classes. I spoke to an honors class this semester. And another thing that we're doing with the honors program is something that we've not done before. Each of the honors students has to do some kind of project, some kind of research project. So I'm working with an honors project, student to look at ACEs. Now, we've talked about ACEs, or Adverse Childhood Experience Survey, in this group before, but I'm not sure that everybody was here when we did that. So I'm giving you the, what is usually the glossy brochure, but I've run out of them, so that's sort of a homemade version, and clearly I flunked a stapling class. I don't know that those are all on point. But ACEs are Adverse Childhood Experiences, are those things that create toxic stress in children. And they look at eight different things. I'll make this quick. The three things that happen directly to children, child abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, and neglect, and then five things that might happen within a child's immediate family. Substance abuse, mental health issues like depression, domestic violence, divorce or separation, or a family member who's incarcerated. So my student wanted to look at what ACEs look like at Iowa State. What are Iowa State students coming with their experience with this kind of toxic stress? And, you know, when you get a chance to read the brochure, the toxic stress, particularly when it happens to children, say, 3 years and younger, causes a fundamental change in the architecture of that child's brain and can lead to 10 different chronic diseases as adults. Now, there are things, you know, with interventions that may not happen, but, and a lot of this, I think, is common sense. If a child doesn't get a good start, it's harder to be a good adult. But what they've done is quantify that really well. And what they found particularly is that kids who have four or more of those ACEs are much more likely to have these kinds of chronic diseases. And these are chronic diseases that cost us a phenomenal amount of not only heartache, but money. And so, of course, what we would like to do is show that, you know, the more interventions you have at a younger age, the less likely you are to have those kinds of conditions on down the line. So what she and I did, or what I was able to do, because I am on faculty, is go into quite a few classrooms and present this. And the good news about that is we have about 800 surveys at this point. It's gathered a few more last week. But able to talk about ACEs with students, give them information about them, give them information about resources, and then gather those surveys. So we've collected most of the data now, and except for those last few that I did. And she'll be presenting that in a poster session next spring. Because we did not go through human subjects, we can't publish that. And I can't really bring those results back to you, but my hope is, this is my private little hope, that the university will look at this information and speak, you know, be able to look in terms of what kinds of issues are students coming to school with and what kinds of services we need to provide for them as a result of that. And of course, Iowa State students are a third of our population in Story County. What kinds of other services? The university can't possibly provide services, mental health services, say, for 36,000. So what other services do we have in the community that can also be helpful? So I have found that to be a very gratifying experience to be a part of, and I think maybe we'll be able to gain some information that will be useful to the students and the community as a whole. We have, as you can see, we have information about what adults are experiencing in Iowa, and we found that 55% of Iowa adults have at least one ACE. And, you know, this is not just not getting the pony. These are very traumatic instances. So we are lower than the state average, or the national average, at about 64% of Americans have at least one ACE. So about two-thirds of the population have suffered some really significant trauma as children, which is not good news. But knowing that, there are some things that we can put in place to combat that, I hope. So, to that end, and then the other thing I want to apprise you of, keep you up to date on, is that heroin task force that is in place in Story County. And a couple things you need to know. YSS and CFR, Community Family Resources, work together in September and October to apply for a state grant. They will do several things, help with treatment, but also help work in the community looking at a number of things, including providing Narcan to first responders. So last week, through this grant, we were able to take a number of people to a training in Des Moines or Ankeny on how to administer Narcan. And so Ames Police, Sheriff's Department, a lot of first responders went to that, reported out on that on Monday. And they went to actually a training of trainers. So now we have a group of people who can go to other first responder groups and parents and treatment centers and work with that. Through that, we will receive funds to provide those first responders with Narcan. So we're pleased about that. So most of the first responders in Story County will be receiving those kinds of things and be trained in that. The firefighters have opted not to be included in that group, just so you know. So firefighters are not going to be carrying Narcan. They don't want to do that. They want to put out the fire, and somebody else is going to take care of the other stuff. So a word to the wise on that. Narcan, by the way, can cost anywhere between $52 and something like $4,000 for the Cadillac model. I have no idea what that's involved. You pull a plug and it tells you, there's a voice that says, unwrap it, do that. That's not the kind we're going to be getting. The stuff that we get will be, $75.
Isn't it the intranasal?
Pardon?
The intranasal?
Yes.
That sounds like the easiest way to get it.
Well, yeah.
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 But it comes basically complete with somebody who tells you how to do it.
Okay.
And that costs extra money. Yeah, you can. It's injectable, and then there is a nasal spray. Now, the catch with Narcan, Johnny, you're the better person to explain this, is opiates last about 4 to 6 hours. Narcan only lasts about an hour and a half-ish, and so you can give somebody a dose at the, you know, when they overdose, say, right away, they come back to life, but they could still overdose within that 4 to 6 hour arc.
Right. The whole concept is like EpiPen. You give a shot of an EpiPen with an allergic reaction, but then you give it to them on the way to the emergency room because it only lasts for a short period of time.
The problem is some people say, I'm good now, and they go on their merry way, and it doesn't always end well.
Yeah.
So, but it's better than the old.
Right.
It's about saving lives. The task force is also going to do, and I think I've mentioned this before, two things on January 10th. There will be a grand rounds at Mary Greeley with Dr. Bullinger and Dr. and I never remember her name from Iowa City, who are both people who are working with heroin addicts in their practice. And then that night there will be a town hall at City Council Chambers from 7 to 8:30. And the town hall, there will be a panel. The sheriff's going to be there. Jeff Huff, who's a commander with Ames Police. Scott Sitzman, who is a pharmacist with CVS. Dr. Bullinger, who's going to speak with at Grand Rounds that day. Dale Woolery, who is now the new acting drug czar, is going to be there. Peter Komandowski, who is the director of the Partnership for Drug-Free Iowa, and Michelle Delariva from CFR is going to moderate that. And it really is going to be just a quick thing up front, and then people who are there can ask anything they've ever wanted to know about opiates. So it's really a Q&A sort of thing. It will be broadcast live over the Ames City channel, and people can call in. And I think there's also going to be an opportunity on the city website to send in questions ahead of time, because my question was, what if it's 24 below and there's a blizzard and we're just sitting there with an empty room? How does that work? So we're going to try and generate some questions ahead of time. Panel mostly all lives in town, so we'll be able to get there. But so I think that will be interesting. Part of what we had to do for the grant was a needs assessment. We did a number of key informant surveys and discovered that most people don't know much about opioids. And so this is part of a response to that. You know, one of the first steps is to educate people. We've had about 168 deaths in Iowa that we can draw a straight line to opiates. And so that's where Iowa is, whereas Ohio, they're averaging 4,000. So we think we're in a good place to maybe get ahead of some of this. You know, it's sort of on its way here, but we would like to be preemptive and get people educated and get some things in place.
Great. Excellent. Very good. Very good. Boy, that opioid epidemic, as I learn more about it, boy, there is multi-layered. Who's at fault here?
We had a round table over at the Sheriff's Department, and Bill McCartney, the Polk County Sheriff, brought his chief deputy up, and his chief deputy retold the story that they have one woman in Polk County that's had 29 overdoses that their fire department has brought her back from. This year.
That's same. A little too much.
Well, I'm thinking we are setting a trend.
Mm-hmm.
29. That was from last week, so it might be 30 now.
It's too ambitious.
She's got a problem.
One other thing, I gave you a couple of different documents on marijuana. I was in a meeting yesterday sort of linking marijuana and the vaping law again. There is a new vaping device that actually is very specific for marijuana, and you can charge it in your computer. So one more time, thank you for getting ahead of that.
Yes, we did.
Marijuana and legalizing marijuana.
That's
going to
be a whole
nother thing. This was very interesting. I tell you what, you know, I sat down, you know, you always tell when I'm reading something, I'll highlight it stuff, but reading about this effects of marijuana in the body, on the body, smoking pot, linked to abnormal gait.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, it's a hallucinogen, and anytime you can't see straight, it's tough to walk straight too.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, so now we're going to go on to comments from staff. John, or any comments from staff? I'm sorry? Anyone? Nope. Okay, so from the Board of Health, do you have any comments? Kristen?
I do.
Okay.
I met with Teresa Ferrari and Shelley from Surrey County Public Health yesterday to talk about our emergency response plan for Surrey County and how we were going to proceed with revising that, which we've been working on for quite a while. They met with Keith Morgan several weeks ago just for some introductory discussion. Ultimately, ideally, we would hire someone to come in and redo it, but financial resources and time are not there. So we are going to take what is currently there and not quite complete or very current, and we're going to break it down into sections and try to meet on a monthly basis, the three of us, to continue to go through that and identify gaps, looking at the responsibilities that are currently assigned to which entities in there and whether those are appropriate or need to be different people or whether it's even attainable to have those assigned to those people. So we'll work on doing that section by section. So we started with Annex A, and we're meeting again in the middle of January, kind of towards the end of January. And then we will seek consultation from Keith Morgan and Ethan, the attorney, to help us as we need information from them. So at the very end, we will bring it here and everybody can read.
It is very important for us to understand how much work Kristen is putting into this. And I look at some of these things and I find quite confusing, and she just knows what's going on. So it's... Yeah, you should be really, I mean, really, this is a big project and a phenomenally important one.
That's to say, if you have Keith Morgan involved, working with him and Jamie Weidert on a mass casualties planning document, Keith Morgan is a fracker. He just goes deep and he blows it up. He fracks when he gets information out.
Okay, Mark?
Margaret, I have one question on Crestview's well. If that well wasn't good enough for the people, why are we allowing one house?
There was capacity.
So the water passes its the bacteria test and all that?
Yes, it has been.
It has been?
Yes. The capacity was bad, and then how they treated the water in the holding tanks. And that.
Right.
Yeah. So I think for one
for that one house,
there.
Thank you. Nothing. I think I touched on it with mass casualties. Other than that, I would say I would reflect back on the year that was, because as we started 2017, I don't think we had the expectation, let alone the hope, that we were going to be where we are on Crestview. So I would say good on everybody attached, because it came through a lot of effort on a lot of people, so it was not an easy lift. And we're not done, but I suspect, I reflect on the fact that I had that vigorous argument with Bill Talbot here last summer, saying he only needed 6 months to close this, and I think he was more right than I was. But at some point, it will stop being what it is. It will turn into whatever the future holds.
We're better taken care of, okay?
Yeah.
All right, came very far. There's no longer people there. That's the biggest thing for me.
We've had some real successes, too. What you don't hear, Carl is not here to speak to it, but there have been people who have been made better by just the fact that they got the nudge in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So it's got a feel-good quality to it. Not everyone was a success. Some people have only gone and done their next version of the life that they left Crestview with, but in a different location. But others took advantage of the resources provided, the opportunity provided, and the help that was extended. So, and some of it came from this group. And I would take that as, you know, you affected people's lives in a positive way.
So also, it was great with the support that the Board of Supervisors gave us.
It had to be. Everybody, it was all hands-on, and this board spoke to it, too, and it was part of what moved it. So.
Okay, great. And I have nothing to say. So, I will move for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. We're adjourned. Thank you very much.
Okay, you guys all have